Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 21 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is my good friend J-Dub from Dubsism. Welcome back to the show, J-Dub.
I feel like there's only one thing to say, but yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah, that's true. That is definitely the way to do it. I'm glad that we were able to keep you off the DL this season and bring you back off the bench. It's appreciated that you're able to join us.
Yes, I intend this to be my triumphant return, and with any luck, this won't be the last time you invite me back for one of these, but we'll see.
I've invited you. That's not you. I'm sorry. You declined. So don't. Well,
I did decline. But what I meant by that was, you know, I'm always running the risk that I'm going to say something that, you know, cancels my ticket here. You know.
No, there's nothing you can say that'll cancel your ticket because I get editing privileges. So you're good.
Okay, so then that at first that sounded like a challenge, but yes, I can be edited. So, okay.
Yes, you can be edited.
I should have that.
All right. Yes, yeah, get a t-shirt made. I can be edited. That works. I like that. All right, so minute 21 begins with Cobb spilling the beans and ends with Dr. Schiller trying to figure out how to explain things. So we left off on Friday with Simon calling up the police station, and for some reason, I mean, we touched slightly upon this on Friday, but for some reason Cobb is starting to tell Simon all about John, you know, which, I mean, from a viewer perspective, obviously what he's doing is just giving us more exposition as to what's going on, so that we know where John is standing here. But it doesn't make any sense from Cobb's perspective to be doing something like this. You know, like, why do you need to tell? I mean, he starts off this minute by saying, that he has a hanging word department from what we said on Friday. And then he goes, by this time next month, he's going to be a security guard. Like, why tell that to a quote unquote terrorist, someone who is terrorizing the city? Like, who cares? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I was just going to,
besides exposition,
ask a question here. And it's like, okay, when you start talking about, you know, the previous minute and the exposition, and obviously we are leading up to something here, but I've always, as many times as we've done this together, I always come in and I just kind of try to focus in on the minute itself, because it seems like there's got to be a key in every minute that makes this conversation be what it should be. And it's okay. So go back to your point when you keep going with what you're saying, because I think you're leading up to what my key actually here is.
Okay. So I mean, basically what Cobb says here is, by this time next month, he's going to be a security guard. His own wife wants him, nothing to do with him. And he's about two steps shy of becoming a full blown alcoholic. And John, who's listening in on the conversation, you know, motions to him, puts up one finger and goes, one step.
I got a big kick out of that. But you're very close to my key. I'm gonna since we're on Bruce Willis, I'm gonna throw out the first part.
And Cobb continues and says, now listen to me. You sound like a real smart guy. What is it you want? And then Simon says over the phone, are you talking about money? Well, whatever. McLean is a toilet bug. Now, what would it take just to forget him and live happily ever after? So, again, this is John's boss, who is completely throwing him under the bus right here, from the perspective that, yeah, we don't care about him. You shouldn't care about him. Tell me how much money you want, and we're going to give it to you. So, you know, he's basically trying to give in to this terrorist who's not even asking for money, and is here, we're going to give you money. You know, because obviously he doesn't know Simon's plan.
Sure, exactly.
And he doesn't know his connection to Hans Gruber, you know, about money.
Well, and it's see, now you really locked me in, because when you brought up Hans Gruber, this is really my key to this whole scene, and that is, it's twofold. First part is Bruce Willis, and is it a rule that Bruce Willis cannot wear a shirt? Does he always have to be in that wife beater?
At this point, yes. I mean, we will see later in this week that he actually does put a shirt on. But okay. But yeah, at this point, he's, well, again, you have to remember that he was just in boxers just 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. And again, you know, this is looking at the minute by itself, taking it out of context a smidge. But then the second thing is, when you brought up Hans Gruber, it just, the bad guy in every one of these movies has to sound kind of like he's doing a bad Zsa Zsa Gabor impression.
Maybe.
I mean, I'll just, because, you know, wait for,
because they're Germans talking with British accents. You know?
Of course. And I think we discussed this when we did The Great Escape, about, you know, how every foreigner in a lot of movies, they just automatically have British accents no matter what their nationality is.
Yeah, of course. It goes with playing the field.
Okay.
You know, that's how they do it.
But see, here's, now, when you talked about that I declined an invitation, let's just color that in for a moment, because it's important here. When you first approached me about my triumphant return to the Minute by Minute podcast, you gave me two choices. You gave me It's a Wonderful Life, and you gave me what I thought was Die Hard. Okay, I missed the sequel, Die Hard with a Vengeance part. So I told you, well, since It's a Wonderful Life was the original installment on my blog of classic movies that everybody loves that I hate, you said, well, let's skip for season, for our English speaking friends, let's skip to season 7. And I again missed that it was Die Hard with a Vengeance. Thought it was Die Hard. Having said that, the reason why that's important is because, yes, I hate It's a Wonderful Life, but I also kind of hate sequels. So we're kind of at an interesting point. The key here to all of this is that, you know, when we talk about Bruce Willis and we talk about the Hans Gruber connection, rule number one of sequels, use as many tropes from the original as you possibly can. So in this moment, I got the Zsa Zsa Gabor accent and I got Bruce Willis and a wife beater. Bing. Done.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. It makes sense. And just to correct you, I did invite you to Die Hard, four seasons ago. And either you didn't get the email and I don't remember what the story was. You were invited back, but I don't remember exactly what happened.
So there was some point where
I invited you, and then I did invite you for something else. It might have been Die Hard 2, and I think you were having medical issues or something like that, and therefore you declined at that point also. You told me we'll talk about it in the future. I think so. I could go back to my emails and try and find it if it's really that important. But I don't want you to think that I didn't want you back.
No, you're making it sound that way. That's not my point at all. My point is that I thought I was doing Die Hard this time. I'm not. It is what it is. I'm glad to be back in any way, shape, or form, even if I got to listen to Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Okay, well, again, based on what you just said, if you were doing Die Hard, you'd have to listen to Zsa Zsa Gabor also. So
absolutely,
it doesn't make a difference.
You know, but from I would at least get to watch him get dropped off a skyscraper.
Right, that's true. But again, you know, did you actually do? Did you start doing the research on Die Hard?
No. I made sure what I was doing. I did, however, almost pick the wrong week of video clips to look at. So there is that.
Okay. Other people have done that too. I had someone who prepared, it was during It's a Wonderful Life. I had someone who prepared the wrong week. And, we had to take a 45 minute break so that he can then go do his notes and do it. And in his defense, originally he had a different set of episodes, but he had to decline doing them. So I switched him with someone else and told him that I switched him, but he apparently had forgotten. So, you know, he did the research on the wrong episodes. But, you know, anyone listening to those episodes, and I'm not even going to say who it is, anyone listening to those episodes wouldn't even notice that he only had 45 minutes to check it all out again. Yeah, and he did a great job.
Well, you know, so, the show must
no
go
on. No complaints there. Yes, the show must always go on. And, I mean, Simon gives him a very straight answer and says, you know, money is shit to me. I would not give up McClane for all the gold in your Fort Knox. So my first question for you is, what do you know about Fort Knox?
Fort Knox, actually not far from where I live. Fort Knox is in Kentucky. It is the home of the
United States Gold
Repository. Huh? Fort Knox?
No, I thought you lived in Wisconsin.
Fort McCoy is in Wisconsin. Fort Knox.
I thought you lived in Wisconsin.
No, I live in Indiana.
Or is it Indiana? Indiana. All right, you told the story about going to Wisconsin. Okay, you live in Indiana, right?
Yes. So it's home to two things, actually. It is home to the gold repository, made famous in, you know, things like Goldfinger. And it's also home to the U.S. Army Armor Training Center. So if you go to Fort Knox, not only can you see the gold repository, but you can go to the George Patton Museum.
All right. So apparently you do know a lot more about it than most people do, which is great. Do you know what year they built Fort Knox?
I really want to say it was sometime Civil War-ish, because isn't it named after Henry Knox, who was a Secretary of War?
Well, it was actually only the depository was built in 1936.
Okay, I thought you were talking about the actual Army installation itself, because I think the Army installation predates the gold repository, but I'm not 100% sure.
The Army installation was, what, you were correct, that was during the Civil War in 1861, when it was called Fort Duffield.
Okay, we've learned something.
There you go. Yes, it was known as, and it was and both the Union and Confederate forces wanted the land. So they had a lot of problems there. and they changed the name. It was named after Henry Knox, who was the chief of artillery during the Revolutionary War and was the first Secretary of War. And they expanded the property in June 1918 when they renamed it Fort Knox.
Yes, because
And then, as I said, they added the gold depository in 1936.
Okay.
Which I mean, it's great how they have this little clue. This is a clue for later in the movie. I mean, I know that you're just looking at it right here, not looking at anything beyond this week, but it is a clue for those who are writing down little clues along the way. There's something going to happen with Fort Knox. Possibly. Maybe. Could be.
Maybe, possibly, could be. It, no spoiler alerts, but Goldfinger does not figure in this.
No. So do you know any other movies or TV shows that deal with Fort Knox?
Besides
Goldfinger, as you mentioned.
There's got to be a bunch, but off the top of my head, I don't think I can tell you one.
Okay, so there is a TV show called Ghost Hunters, which filmed a few episodes of Fort Knox in 2011. There's an episode of SpongeBob that mentions it.
That would have missed
there
me.
Is an,
no children.
That's right. There's an episode of G.I. Joe, the cartoon. During the first season, where they had an episode of stuff that takes place at Fort Knox. Pinky and the Brain, there's an episode of them trying to break into Fort Knox in order to get the gold.
So this list is cartoon heavy.
Yes, very well. I guess they figured that in most cases, you can only try and get into Fort Knox using cartoon characters. You know, something like that.
Okay, I never thought of Gert Frobe as a cartoon character, but, you know, whatever. Let's, you know.
Exactly. There is a security software that's known as Samson Knox, which is named after it. There is a song by System of a Down called BYOB, which mentions Fort Knox. There is a video game called Project Zomboid, which the map of the area where you're trying to, I guess, clear out all the zombies is basically Fort Knox.
Okay.
Then you have Penguins of Madagascar. The opening scenes take place in Fort Knox. Again, another cartoon. And finally, this movie. You know, they have that Fort Knox is mentioned numerous times, you know, throughout the course of this movie. Again, as a clue for something going on later on. But we're not going to go into what that is. So actually, that's pretty interesting. Of all these references, there's two that are live action and all the rest are cartoons. So I don't know what that says about Fort Knox. Well,
it might say more about
Hollywood. Maybe they're just trying.
That's a whole thing.
Maybe the idea is they're trying to get kids to know what Fort Knox is. So you keep it all in cartoons so that when they get older, when they hear the reference of Fort Knox, they'll be like, oh, I know what that is. That's from SpongeBob. You know, stuff like that. I don't know.
Good as theory as any. Why the hell not? I mean, sure.
Exactly. And at this point, Simon continues and says, 72nd Street Subway, payphone, 15 minutes, McLean and the Samaritan. If you're competent in the least, you found the briefcase. So you know what I mean by penalty. And then he hangs up the phone. And then John turns to Cobb and goes, I want to thank you for that vote of confidence, Walter. Well, I thought it was worth a try. This guy's a raving maniac. So that's not really much of an excuse as to why he would actually, you know, make that type of comment. And once again, we have the discrepancy, which we've talked about numerous times over the last few weeks, whether Cobb's first name is Walter or Arthur. Because he's, you know, they call him Walter, but he's listed in the credits as Arthur. So, I don't know, maybe Dr. Schiller chime in and he goes, well, he couldn't be any clearer if he got it from a case history. He gave you clues to his identity. He spoke. And then he gets cut off. People are going to have to come back tomorrow to find out what the rest of the things that he says. Because he just stops mid-sentence by saying he spoke. That sounds like something you would hear in Shakespeare. He spoke.
The one thing that I came into this not really expecting was I didn't really think I was going to get a Shakespeare reference in a discussion about a Die Hard sequel. So, you know, you blew that fastball by me.
Well, come on. Don't you know by now to expect the unexpected with me?
Well, yeah, but if I expect it, then it's no longer unexpected, so you're keeping me on my toes here.
No, but you don't know what that unexpected is going to be.
Well, exactly.
Right, okay. All right, that makes sense. So, why don't you at this point, I don't have anything else to say about this minute, so you want to give your sports analogy reference
before we get into the script? People that aren't, you know, used to be having been not around for a couple of episodes here due to various and sundry reasons. If you go over to my blog, one of the signature series over there is Sports Analogies Hidden in Classic Movies. And so whenever we have these conversations minute by minute, there's always a sports analogy kind of hidden in all of them. And in this case, this goes back to my bit about stealing tropes to make the sequel work. And that's something that happens throughout the sports world, and as we're recording this, we're in the middle of spring here in America, and spring means, yes, let's trot out another bad spring football league to try and compete with the NFL. Well, all of these imitation leagues that try to get you to watch, they steal tropes from the NFL left and right because that's what they want, or that's what they think you as a viewer want. So they'll be as much like the NFL as they can. In this case, you know, picture a bunch of guys out there in, you know, white athletic top t-shirts being Bruce Willis, and that's kind of the idea. So if that makes any sense, you know, sequels steal things from the original. These discount sports leagues steal from the big guys is really the point here.
Okay, that makes sense. Exactly. All right, so let's get into the into the script here. So, I mean, up until now, we've had a lot of parts of the script that just don't really correspond with what's going on in the movie itself. And I mean, this is another example. Just about nothing from this minute appears in the script. You know, we have stuff that happens later on, but not really anything here. Because we don't have the whole aspect of Cobb trying to say to Simon, you know, all the different problems with John and stuff like that. So basically, this entire conversation doesn't appear. So there isn't really much to talk about in the script this week or today. Later in the week, we will have other things to say.
So now for the guy that's coming into this, going at this just strictly minute by minute, are you saying that as they shot this scene, that the conversations are ad-libbed, or that this scene wasn't in the script at all?
The copy of the script that I have, that is the original script called Simon Says, this scene does not appear in it.
Okay.
You know, we talked a little bit on Friday about what Simon says on the phone, but he doesn't wait for any response or anything like that. He just gives his instructions and that's it.
Okay.
There's none of this aspect of John and Cobb, you know, or Cobb talking about the money and John, you know, throwing in the thing about that he's one step away from being an alcoholic and things like that. Nope. None of that's there. Doesn't appear.
Okay, that was the question. So,
yeah, all right, and that is the answer.
It's funny how.
All right, works. So every Monday, that's right. So every Monday we have a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan directed films. There aren't many to choose from. You only have 11 movies to choose from. So hopefully you've seen at least five of them. So why don't you give us your rankings of them, starting from number five and working your way up.
Well, let me start with this. I got 13 to choose from rather than 11, but that's, you know, quibbling.
Okay. I was only talking about feature. That's right. All right. Well, we'll see if those two are not listed as movies. So we'll see.
Well, okay.
It could be something that you could have dealt with the TV stuff.
Okay, to get into this list, to be fair, this is where you got to go back to the whole thing about how I just can't do sequels, and I don't do remakes. So when you've got such a small number of McTiernan films to deal with, if I don't want to do sequels and I don't want to do remakes, I got a real problem here. And so, I mean, okay, so you got to talk about, you know, Rollerball or, you know, Thomas Crown Affair or the whole, that whole Last Action Hero franchise. What are there's three of those?
What are you talking about? The Last Action Hero, there's only one. The Last Action Hero, there's only one movie.
Okay, that's where our two differences are, because I found three of those. He must not have done the other two then.
No, they're different versions of it. If I remember correctly, they're different versions of the movie.
Different versions, but only one of them is a McTiernan movie. Is that where we're at? Is my off? Well, and it's not even really that important, because if you want my list, you can take 5, 4, and 3 and just throw in whatever movie you want.
The other two that you're talking about are deleted and alternate scenes and alternate ending.
Okay, really is 11. Somebody where I was looking counted the other ones. Okay, fine. So here's the thing I'll say about McTiernan. I don't dig most of his filmography, but to his credit, he's made two movies that are arguably the best in their genre ever. And so at number two, to go along with our theme here, the best action movie ever made in my book is Die Hard, McTiernan film. And apparently, which I had a chance to talk about, but blue, or I was trying to die, or something like that. Whatever. Number one, and of course, Die Hard, best action movie. Number one, Hunt for Red October, best submarine movie ever, in my opinion. Now, I know there's going to be a Das Boot person out there that's going to say, "Well, what about Das Boot?" Blah, blah. Like, you know what? That's a good movie too. But I really prefer movies that I don't have to take a day off from work to watch. So the nod goes to Red October here.
Okay, so you're saying that you have nothing for three through five?
Three through five, I really don't. I can't speak to a lot of those movies because I've either tried to sit through them or couldn't. Or so the only two movies I can really put in this conversation are Die Hard and Hunt for Red October. I wouldn't be being fair to anything else. And, of course, you know, I don't really want to get your mailbox filled up with, you know, why is this guy talking about this? I just, again, I'm not a big sequel guy, not a big remake guy. That's over 50% of McTernan's filmography. I don't know what else to do. Like I said, I can give you the two movies I know, and other than that, pick three you like, put them in there. I'll sign off on that.
No. I'm just surprised that that you're not a fan of Predator. You know, that's the thing that surprises me.
Predator, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. Okay, if it makes
you feel... fit into the categories that you just mentioned. You know, it's not a sequel and it's not a remake.
Put Predator in there if you need to.
I don't need to. John, I don't need to. It's your top five. You decide what's in the top five or not. I was just, you know, confused based on the fact that you mentioned that you don't like sequels or remakes. And I was just surprised that maybe you've never seen Predator.
Well, I've seen Predator. It's not in my wheelhouse. I know there's a lot of people who love it, and I don't, you know, if, you know, at Dubsism on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, if you want, don't fill up Rob's mailbox telling me how wrong I am about Twitter. Come to me. You can at me all you want, but it's not my thing. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, that's fair. You don't need to apologize. Not at all. All right, so why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Well, since they're going to be looking for me, all you Predator fans, or if you're a big fan of McTiernan's work in general, you can find me, like I said, Dubsism, Dubsism. It's a first page search result on Google. It's the most interesting independent sports blog on the web. That's one place you can find it. Like I said, you can get me at Dubsism on the artist formerly known as Twitter, Dubsism@yahoo.com, Dubsism. It's not that tough to find if you really want to talk to me.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to shoot me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother trucker.
Marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.